If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Well, boys, this is it. The grand final edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. And Scotty, we couldn't have scripted this any better. The local derby, what are we calling it?
Warner Anderson Cup.
I think we let them off the leash very, very shortly. Of course, Richmond taking on Geelong, first ever night grand final, played at the Gabba. It's got it all. We've got Ash Barty presenting the Premiership Cup. So we'll touch on that with Mick, given that his team is right at the centre of that. But so much to look at, of course. Ando's going to catch up with Royce Hart a little bit later on from that 67 Premiership side against Geelong. A bit of trade stuff too. So we might keep the grand final in reserve now, apart from just quickly getting the early word from each of the boys. Ando,
good luck,
what love. Is the feeling?
I want the music. I want that TV ringside music to get me pumped up before I get into Mick. What's my feeling? My feeling towards Michael is that he has to... I heard LeBron James after LA won the title over Miami, won the NBA championship, saying that he wanted a bit of darn respect. Well, Mick, you got to give some respect to Geelong. You got to give some respect to Chris Scott. I know you don't like him, and he got under your skin a few years ago when you didn't think he gave respect to Richmond, which may be a fair comment. But at this stage, you've got to look back at Geelong and say, this is a really, really good football team. And I don't think it matters whether it was Geelong or St Kilda or Western Bulldogs or Collingwood or Brisbane or Port. You still wouldn't give me any respect because that's the way. I don't know with you how serious you are sometimes. I think you like to take the piss because you always have a laugh afterwards. And I do like you as a bloke, but there are moments when it's been tested and this week's been one of them. And I think you're a little bit, to borrow a rhyme in slang one, I reckon you're a little bit Toby Nankervis about the weekend, I've got to say.
Would that be fair, Mick?
Richmond had to play someone in the grand final, I suppose. someone had to get through to qualify. I just hope for your sake, Ando, it doesn't end up like it did for Adelaide and GWS. As we said last week, replay of 1967 grand final. Hopefully a similar result. I just interviewed Kevin Bartlett, actually, and Richo, whose dad played in that game. And that was, I think, 9 points, Ando. Bit of controversy with Fred Swift marking the ball in the line. So something like that would be suffice.
No controversy. You want to go back to the first quarter when John Sherrick kicked the goal that the umpire claimed was over the goal line, or the last quarter where John Sherrick took a mark and the umpire paid it and then allowed Ricky Graham to take the kick, and he kicked a point when Sherrick would have kicked with his... Now, I've got to calm down. I've been told not to... My psychiatrist says to me to not go back to those 67 or 31, for that matter. We actually won 1931. Was the other time the two sides have played. But it's... when I mentioned Nankervis before, I don't think there's a more important player, Scotty, on the ground than Toby Nankervis, given what he's going to have to put up with. And not just Stanley, not just Blissars, but the best ruckman forward I've seen since John Nicholls in Tom Hawkins. He is dominant.
It's become an art form and a secret weapon, hasn't it, really? I don't understand how the normal ruckman, he just pushes him out of the way. Haven't they figured it out? It's like, this is what he's going to do, boys. Hello.
Did wake up this morning and see that he's been quarantined, Tom, with flu-like symptoms.
He's got the corona.
They're saying sore throat maybe come from the kids' situation, but, wouldn't that be... just a story and a half. If we had another little Rona scare in grand final week, it would just top 2020 off pretty magnificently, wouldn't it? But no, we'll keep a close eye on Tom, and we'll, as I say, delve into the grand final a little bit later. I like Ando putting LeBron on the agenda too. I think that may be the challenge for you boys. Whoever wins has to turn up to next week's podcast with the big cigar and the cap on for the winner's press conference next week. But look, let's just whip through a couple of the other sort of footy issues before we delve into the big one in more depth. And as I say, really let Ando and Mick off the leash to make the case for each of their respective teams. But Scotty, there's no bigger story over the weekend than North Melbourne, and in particular Reshore after that 5 p.m. press release on Friday. We've had much discussion over the weekend about coaches and you know the stress that they're put under with the all-encompassing nature of the game at the moment. Here's what Alistair Clarkson had to say on AFL 360 on Monday night about this.
I'm a bit concerned for our profession, to be fair, you know, particularly the 17 peers in the roles that we've got. And as I said, hats off to Scotty and Dimmer for managing the seasons that they've had this year. But, you know, when I look at a list that I made up earlier, you know, Hurdy, Bomber Thompson, Bales, Walshy, Lades, Spud Frawley, Pikey, now Reshore. And there's probably others too, you know, who have done it tough. And in our industry, in our country, because it's a small fishbowl, not a large fishbowl, any coach that does it particularly tough, he has to carry that in his public life more so than what a coach would have to do in a much bigger market like America or Europe. So that carries an enormous strain for many in our industry. And I've got concerns given the high quality of all those lads that I've mentioned. Some have lost their lives, not directly as a result of coaching, but some of it has been stress related. And yeah, it's sad to see what happens to such decorated people in our game. You know, the Brett Rattans and the Michael Vosses and the Matty Primuses and these type of guys, Hurdy, that were such decorated players on the field in their playing careers and then had a go at coaching. It didn't work for them. Rats, fortunately, of those, that quartet got another opportunity, but the other three haven't as yet and may never get another opportunity. We're hoping that he might get a chance at the Kangaroos if he puts his hat into the ring. But I'm concerned, and I think the game should be concerned because it's an enormous burden to carry. And we need to be doing something both as individual clubs, individual coaches too. I think we've always looked after everyone else in the club and put everyone else in the club before ourselves. And maybe it might be time that we have to take stock ourselves of just what our workflow is in our schedule, because it's now getting to a point where we're seeing some real casualties out of our industry.
There's obvious concern here, isn't there?
It's a very sad situation. I think everyone handled it well. Like, the media didn't speak about it for a couple of weeks until Reece and North Melbourne were at least ready for it to become public. Look, he clearly didn't have the support he needed around him. In hubs, it was unusual. I know there's a wider problem that Clarko's talked about, but this is as much about North Melbourne getting their own ship in order, and clearly, they haven't. The CEO didn't go up to the hubs when they might have known that a first-year coach and a first-year footy manager might have needed some assistance. That's been frowned upon. Ben Buckley, you know, lives in Sydney. You don't hear a lot of him. Look, North can't leave themselves vulnerable. We know all the talk about Tassie and relocate. All that. This is just a bit of a train wreck. And poor old Reece Shaw is hopefully the last chapter to it, and they can fix it. But Michael Voss, I don't know, what do they do? They're trying to get Ruse in as an advisor. I don't agree with that sort of behaviour, but maybe Michael Voss.
So Michael Voss seems like he's in the box seat, Ando, but it was interesting. I heard Mick Malthouse speak about this issue on the weekend, and it's just such a different environment now. I mean, he was suggesting to take social media away from particularly young coaches and really go for that kind of senior figure in the chair alongside them situation, just because the landscape has just changed so drastically.
How often has that worked in an AFL club situation where you've had a mentor come in for a junior? I remember going back to Peter Swab with David Park, and that didn't work at all. No coach really wants that.
I reckon you got to be careful, Clarko. I know what he said was right about coaches being spat out, but AFL coaches are not, in my opinion, any different to a lot of other people in society who've got pressure and mental health, and they're not in some unique category. Granted, there is scrutiny on them, but so if I'm North, I'm looking at the Chris Fagan success, going for that guy that's seasoned. I don't know who's around. Maybe it's David Noble, someone like that who's been around footy. I'm not sure about Voss. Even though he's a great player, it didn't work that well for him at Brisbane, and that would be a risk.
Plenty to keep an eye on there. And as you say, Ando, we're thinking of Reshaw and his family as he sort of takes the time that he needs, and we're sure he's getting plenty of support. So our thoughts certainly go out to Reese and the Kangaroos at the moment. But Ando, just a quick one on your club. I know we'll get into the game a little bit later on, but where were you yesterday when you heard the news that Jeremy Cameron wants to come back to G-Town?
I was speaking with a Geelong person, actually, about an hour before that happened, who's involved in the club, and asking him where it was at, and about a few other players such as Quentin Markle and Nakai Cockatoo and Charlie Constable, because there's a bit of movement at Geelong because they've got, as we know, they're such an old side going into Saturday night. And the only really young blokes, who are they? Scotty Brandon Parfitt, Sam Simpson.
Grime Myers,
that's about it, isn't it? They think they've got players like Lachlan Fogarty, Narkle, Jordan Clark, the young Sam DeConey, they really like as an up-and-comer, younger brother of Tom, Saba you just mentioned. But yeah, that's an issue, and they're bringing another guy into the club, and Jeremy Cameron, who's going to cost them, I think.
You don't mind.
Yeah, well, with that, Mick, I mean, you say, well, we've got Tom Hawkins, why do you need Jeremy Cameron? But they're very, very different types of players.
Oh, yeah, you need to.
Cameron can play off Hawkins really well, and Cameron will be a better player for that, not having to wrestle. That's not his go. He plays more like Royce Hart, where he can float across the pack and get up the ground because he's such an good endurance athlete.
Tim Kelly's money that they offered him, obviously, they saved all that because he went. They got 3 first-round picks. They might have to give a couple of them away because GWS will match the offer. It's not going to be the end of the world. I still think they'll get a good young player in the draft, plus Cameron.
I was fascinated with Jeremy Cameron having that lunch at Rockpool in Sydney with David Matthews,
Who chips off the photographer?
And James Warburton. And it's been explained to me that Warburton was there because he's a mad GWS fan and he lives next door to David Matthews and Eric. What a load of crap that is. I mean, you're telling me that the head of Channel 7, if Geelong's got a bloke who Tim Kelly's about to leave, we take Daryl Summers along or Rob Dawe along because they're mad Geelong supporters. What difference does that make to anything? Warburton was there clearly because we're talking long-term, potentially what he may be able to offer Jeremy Cameron.
He can't offer him anything, can he?
He's not meant to be able to.
Well, maybe a job after he retires.
Maybe.
He can't do that.
What do you think Warburton was there, Mick?
Someone wanted to make it uncomfortable, I think. Someone wanted to make it uncomfortable for Jeremy. And what I thought was interesting is the Giants, as soon as they got the decision, put out a statement to, I think, just try and disrupt Geelong.
The Giants put out a statement to say that his decision had nothing to do with the Giants' chances of winning a premiership or the culture of the club. Guess what? They're not going to win a premiership in the next 3 or 4 years. Not only losing Cameron, they're losing Zach Williams. They're probably going to lose Jai Caldwell, possibly going to lose Zach Langdon. The AFL will be furious about Jeremy Cameron leaving.
Just a quick word, Ando, on the preliminary finalists. Of course, Port Adelaide went very, very close to the Tigers, whereas the Lions, unfortunately, it was 40 points in the end, outdone by the Cats. Just a quick word on those two teams and what they can make of their season.
I think Port Adelaide look back and think that it's a genuine missed opportunity, and I think they probably stuffed it up on Friday night. Probably the conditions didn't help them. I think if it's wet weather about, I'd like to be on the Tigers as much as any club, and there is talk of some showers this Saturday night. But Tigers are a great wet weather side, helps their pressure football. But Port, really good. They've set themselves up. They've got the kids, so they've got a real future. Probably the player that interests me most with Port in terms of development is Todd Marshall. If he comes on and he's shown signs, then you've got a genuine two-prong attack with Charlie Dixon. And they've got their ruck situation sorted out. They just need another tall back, probably. The other side, Brisbane. Yeah, well, Scotty had that comment made last week where he didn't trust Daniel McStay and Eric Hipwood in a final to produce, and he was proven 100% correct. Joe Danaher probably helps solve that if he's fit, and then Hipwood becomes, you know, he has less pressure on him. Hipwood is never going to be a key forward because he's not strong enough. I'm talking about a big, strong, bullocking forward. He's more of a Jeremy Cameron, if you like, and not as strong as him probably. But with Danaher there, they got a fair bit of upside. They pick up two academy players at this year's draft who they really rate. Yeah. So the academy is going to become an issue down the track when clubs start winning premierships with a lot of academy players. Is Harris Andrews an academy player? Yeah, he is, isn't he? So it's something that can give a massive advantage to clubs, the academies. And are they even? Even playing field? I don't think so. But what is a level playing field in the AFL? Not too much. But then again, it's an organisation that can't even present a Brownlow medal to the Brownlow medalist. He has to go and find it himself. So you got to.
Well, you've just let us in there beautifully. I was just going to say those poor Brisbane boys went down 40 points Saturday night. And 40 points outdone, probably enjoyed each other's company on the Saturday night. You would imagine, Scotty, after losing a preliminary final, and then have had to front up to the Brownlow function Sunday night, keep themselves in relative order, particularly the bloke who pretty much knew he was going to go on to win, and then couldn't even get someone to present the medal to him.
You're not happy about the mannequin looks. You think maybe. And apparently, like, Simon Black and Brownlow medalist was in the room. And it's, what I love is the AFL, the comment is someone from events. No one, it's a bit like Dan Andrews in the hotels. So no one actually knows who made that decision to get the mannequin.
You know
cannot recall. I think
normally, Loz, it's Mick who's having a crack at the AFL. I'm happy to do it today, Nick. This is an organisation that's duty of care has been poor for a long period of time. And I go back to the late Bob Davis presented the Premiership Cup. I'm going to say it was 2009. He wanders on the MCG and he does the cup. But he's an 80-year-old man at this time, Bob Davis. He was a frail person. And you know, I knew him well and loved him. But so I was watching him deliberately. And then he's just left there on his own. No one comes to help him. It's not what you do in society. It's not what you do in life. We look after our elders. You don't invite someone onto a ground. I never got over that. I thought it was so poor. But that we've got a situation where the head of our game, the head of the commission, is not going to be at the grand final this Saturday.
Well, that's extraordinary.
Isn't that extraordinary? Seriously. I mean, who would think that was a good idea for Richard Coy to not to turn up at the game? Could he not go there because he didn't want to go? What do you, Mick, do you understand the reason?
Oh, well, he's got a charity event on, I think.
Oh,
but he won't be the chairman for very long, I can tell you that. If the clubs are asking for a review, what they're saying is they've lost confidence in the commission, which the commission has no power anymore. It's a bit of a
toothless tiger.
Yeah, the power's with the executive and Gillen. They wouldn't have a clue half the stuff that the executive is doing. So that'll be interesting, but I couldn't care less if he's at the grand final, to be honest.
The optics of Lachie Neale's smirk presenting himself that medal off the sort of little TVSN, you know, TV shopping style necklace stand, it was just absolutely bizarre. I couldn't agree with you more about Bobby Davis. Ando, we've just, as I said earlier, announced who is going to present this year's Premiership Cup. So it'll be Ash Barty if it's Richmond, and it'll be Ian Nankervis if it's Geelong. And I've got to tell you that the Barty decision initially, I sort of thought, well, that's an interesting one. Social media has lit up, whereas my sort of opinion is, like, this is just not really a ditch to die in for me, because who cares who presents your team with the cup, because you will have won the flag.
What's the issue with Ash Barty? I don't understand. It's just we've been critical because we're looking for something to criticise. Is that how that works?
Well, possibly, but looking for a football person.
She follows. How footy do you need to be? You have to have played 173 and a half games. What's the cutoff? I mean, you know, Ash loves footy. She bags for Richmond. She's a great Australian. Great. Move on.
And I think the biggest criteria is she's in Queensland.
Yeah. And she goes to the footy. She's been every game she's been able to be at that the Tigers have played this year. So you can't ask much more than that.
We've heard many, many, many descriptions on this, Scotty. We've heard the dynasty versus the fairy tale. We've had the chaos versus the control. But, of course, here at the Herald Sun Footy Podcast, It's nothing other than Mick versus Ando, this one. It's maybe you lead us in, Scotty, and one going.
Well, it's the right game. I think the contrasting styles everyone has focused on will be very interesting. I think it's as good a grand final as we've had for a little while, till 2016, really, when the Western Bulldogs did their thing. So, as a matchup, I'm interested to hear what these two gentlemen have. And what do you thought?
Toby Nankervis, if he's the sole ruckman and Chole doesn't come in, has been asked to do something that very few players have ever been asked to do. If he gets injured early, I guess Noah Bolter goes into the ruck, and then who plays on Hawkins? Because Hawkins' strength is probably a bit much for Ashby or Grimes. That to me is the area where Geelong could have an advantage, is in the ruck. With Stanley Blissars were good against Brisbane, albeit with Stephen Martin looked like he was nowhere near fit enough to be playing in that game. McInerney was okay. Geelong's form, I would have thought, going into the finals was poor to fair. It included a game against Richmond when the Cats kicked one goal for three quarters, and then a game against Sydney where, you know, if Tom Papley had kicked straight, he kicked 2-5. Sydney would have won that game. So I was, as a Geelong supporter, I was really worried going into the finals. I thought we probably peaked at the wrong time. But the game against Port in Port wasn't bad. Obviously bad kicking didn't help. The game against Collingwood was compelling. There was a decimation that you rarely see it in finals. Okay, Collingwood was supposedly cooked. Well, maybe they played a side that was a bit too good for them. And Brisbane the other night was, again, I thought, compelling. More so than the Tigers. I mean, Richmond against St Kilda. The third quarter, St Kilda owned the third quarter of that game and really just didn't put it on the scoreboard. And that could have been closer than 5 goals. To me, it was a 2 or 3 goal game. The other night, Tigers were really good in Port Adelaide to win that match. I don't think they were as good, Richmond, as they were in their two premiership years. And I say that Jack Riewoldt kicked 5 goals last year in a premiership and was a brilliant player. Jack hasn't been as good this year, probably with the exception of this game against Geelong where he kicked 4. In that Geelong-Richmond game, I think the Cats had out, certainly Ablett didn't play, Joel Selwood didn't play, Reece Stanley
Rowan was
play,
laid out.
Gary Simpson. Rowan didn't play, and Sam Simpson's come in. And the boys who have gone out are Radigalia, Close, Atkins.
They played a first gamer.
Jarvis.
Yeah.
So they've got players going out who weren't that experienced. And Lachlan Fogarty was the other boy who went out. Against that, the Tigers are probably, Mickey, you've got Edwards has come back.
Yeah, Cochin.
And Prest. I thought Cochin, did Cochin not play either? Okay.
No. But where'd this Simpson bloke come from, Ando? He's Jeff.
Son of Bart. His old man Bart was, Shorty Simpson was a good player. When they brought Simpson back, he played his first game, I reckon, against GWS about 3 years ago. I think the same night Zach Guthrie made his debut. And there was a ball on the far wing and he was manned up and he went for the contest one-on-one. Suddenly he was 3 yards clear of his opponent with the ball. And I thought, how did he do that? So he's got a bit of separation involved.
A bit of class to him.
The other thing, Mick, when he gets the ball, rather than just kick it, as most players would, as a Tommy Atkins would or whatever, which is fair enough, he takes them on. He wants to sidestep. He's got a really good sidestep, like Brandon Parfitt.
Yeah.
He's got some tricks, that boy. He's a pretty handy player. So
he's good for them because they can get slow, as we know, Ando, and that's my greatest fear. Because Richmond's all about manic pressure. We get that. But Simpson and a couple others, Parfitt, their first instinct is, all right, I'm going to go because I can sidestep the bloke on the mark if I have to and get the ball moving. So he's almost single-handedly, in a way, in a couple of weeks, changed a little bit of how they play because he just goes.
Yeah, Henry's doing that a bit, Scotty. Henry took the game on. Henry's very athletic, as we know. He's one of those players that has to play, take the first option because he gets confused otherwise. Their defence, Geelong, blokes who can be a bit shaky, and Colajasny and Henderson have been really good during the finals, other than the first final probably for Colajasny on Motlop. Henderson's been, I think, Geelong's best player in the final series. Remarkable story. I think Geelong's more even, Mick. I think our worst player last week was probably Luke Dalhouse. He's not a bad footballer, as we all know. Premiership player. And I'm not sure the Tigers have quite that evenness over the ground.
Please name a poor player in the Richmond team if you feel that way.
Jack Rewell.
Oh, please. You know, the thing is that I reckon this is my take on the game. If I could get a word in,
you're allowed. Your time starts now. Presidential
Geelong against Collingwood in Brisbane got the game on their terms almost straight away. I was staggered against Brisbane, how quickly Brisbane melted in the midfield. You just, your big bodies, you smash them. You know, Ando, that's not going to happen in this game. Certainly not for prolonged periods like it has. So it's whether, it's really like it was in round 17, whether Geelong can handle the pace on the ball. Now, they're clearly in far better form. But I don't know whether the game will be played anywhere near those last three matches that you've played in terms of the ball movement. And it'll be fascinating to see who goes to Martin. You know, tell me how you think. Will they have Kolodziejczyk on him when he goes forward, or Zach Guthrie, Cam Guthrie in the middle? That's a fascinating matchup. And equally, I think Richmond, what are they going to do with Gary Ablett? Because Daniel Rich, even though he was pretty good, you can't let Gary Ablett get free and kick running goals through 50 like that. So I think that'll be an interesting watch, Martin and Ablett.
If you're doing it in horse racing parlance, you take a look for their form where they match up. The Port Adelaide game is where they do match up, because they both went to Port Adelaide in finals, and both had really tight games against Port. And you'd say, well, Richmond was more impressive. I'd say Richmond wouldn't have won the game if it didn't rain. It reduces footy to the way you like to play it, which is a colourless type of format.
Where
it's a rugby-style game, really, is it? Just run it forward.
It's a movie.
I saw a bloke. One of the guys gave a ratings for one of Richmond player. I think it was Jack Rewald. He got 7.5. I'm going, 7.5? The rating's out of 100, not 10. No, but he tapped the ball on very well. So has Jack become someone who taps the ball on now? I thought Jack was there to mark the ball.
It's a nice goal in the first quarter. Team only kicked six. So anyway, deep down, I think you know how it's going to play.
Gary Ablett, I know we spoke at length about him last week, but now we officially know that this will be his last game. There's no sort of will it be if they win, if they lose type situation. Just a question without notice to all three of you. Scotty, if you can kick us off, your favourite thing to see Gary do? Because for me, it's when he plays forward and he kicks, you know, those goals on the run from the pocket. They are just absolutely sublime. That's my favourite Garyism.
Yeah, I think the one for me when he's running to 50 and he does the fake, he goes around someone and kicks it on the
shoulders hunched.
Yeah, and he sort of does a bit of a wiggle. I think if you see, like, he won't play as well as he did. Well, I don't think he'll play as well as he did in the prelim, and he won't have to, but you just want a couple of moments and it'll be sensational, because he's in great nick. He's confident. He's an X factor, and who would have thought at 36 coming back to win his third flag?
I interviewed Tom Lynch just an hour ago, and I said to him, you played with Gary Ablett Jr. at his peak and Dustin Martin at his peak, and if they're in the schoolyard, which one are you going to select first? What do you think he said?
Dustin Martin, because he plays with you, dickhead. Of course he's going to say Dustin Martin. What do you reckon he'd say? Oh, no, Gary Ablett's a lot better. That's a stupid analogy. You know.
Said it. Gary Ablett.
Did he really?
Did he really?
I thought he was dumb, Tom.
No, he didn't.
Knowing Tom, he said, oh, it's 50-50.
Oh, yeah, of course 50-50. He did. Yeah, he knows it's deep down, it's Gary, but anyway. Tommy.
What about you, Ando? You've watched a lot of him.
Probably there was a goal in Port Adelaide 2007. I reckon he intercepted a kick-in in the first quarter and kicked the goal. That sticks in my memory because it was at a time when the game was still had some heat in it. And I took my kids to a Geelong game. I'm going to say, Scotty, it was against Brisbane. And he kicked the goal from the boundary line at Cadinia Park.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that one? And then he came back with Gold Coast and kicked a goal from a similar spot, I think.
He likes that spot. Yeah.
And probably the toe poke was when Matty Scarlett toe poked it to him.
Oh, no.
But with that was him. Yeah, sorry, Loss, but that was him involved in a team play, because then it went forward. Max Rook got the spoil. Travi Varko scouted it. doesn't get enough credit, Travis Vargo, handballed to Chappie. He probably should have handballed to Jimmy Bartel, but Chappie backed himself, as he always did, and kicked the goal. Martin or Ablett? It's a good call, isn't it, Martin or Ablett? I'd go Martin or Dangerfield's probably a better comparison because they're more they're more contemporary than Ablett, aren't they? Like Ablett's 6 years on from those two blokes.
Gary's not having the who best would you take? His own family.
I'd take Martin ahead of Dangerfield. Just. But Martin's done it.
Yeah.
Martin's done it on the biggest stage, yeah.
Yeah, he's won two Norm Smiths, Dusty. I mean, no, Dustin Martin for mine.
Well, Danger's kicking lets him down, let's be honest.
Yeah, kicking hasn't been as bad.
It's not as bad. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a cliche now. I think he's better.
Compared to Dustin, I meant. So let me.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree with that. No, Dustin's a very good kick, Michael. I agree
one
with
of
that.
The, one of the great kicks, Dustin Martin.
Yep, and if he does it again on Saturday, he might very, very well have three Norm Smith medals and be arguably the greatest finals player we have seen in the modern era. So, yeah, it's all up for grabs on Saturday night at the Gabba. We'll get your tips a little bit later on, margins and Norm Smith medal picks. So I'll give you a bit of a heads up there to start thinking about those. But I mentioned it earlier, Ando's caught up with Royce Hart about that 1967 premiership win over Geelong. Let's take a listen.
The kick now from Patterson. It's a 4-1. A chance for John Perry comes in. Perry swings around now, kicks into the centre, and Marshall is back. Geelong fighting this out every inch of the way. What a gallant effort from both teams. Dennis Marshall now. He kicks down forward and, oh, Mike Perry spilt it. It's picked up by Goggin. He's unloaded. A kick off the ground by Dean. In comes Goggin once again. Goggin swings around. He kicks. Swift marks in the last line of defence. Swift plays on. Right on the line he marked that. Out to the flank on the outer side. Here's a go for Polinelli. Polinelli picks up. He tries a long one. Suspension comes on to congratulate him. And look at the Richmond fellas. They're going mad.
Of course, the Cats and Tigers have only played twice before in grand finals. 1931, when Geelong got up. I wasn't quite old enough to witness that one, but I was a 11-year-old kid in 1967 when Richmond overcame Geelong in one of the greatest grand finals of all time by 9 points. And they had a 19-year-old kid playing at centre forward called Royce Hart, who's been good enough to join us now from his home in Hobart. Hello, Royce. Welcome to the podcast.
G'day, John.
How are you? Fitness good? That famous knee, not too bad?
Yes, they're okay. They haven't got much worse, but it might be just old age, I think, that's causing me problems at the moment, but I'm still getting around.
As I said before, you were 19 in that year. You'd come into the side, I reckon, in that season. You'd topped the goal kicking. I think you played a state game and might have kicked, I don't know, 7 or 8 goals in that. And then, you were instrumental in winning the grand final. It was some season for a teenager who didn't even have his own car.
Yeah, dead set right. I used to catch the tram. Wouldn't be heard of today that I'd be chauffeured round or driving a Mercedes.
Where'd you live?
No money in it then, John. We played for the love of the game. And I look back on it and say, well, I'm glad I went through that period because I don't think we've got the worries that they've got today.
No, but come on, you received those all that money and clothing to sign up with Richmond. Exactly what did you get?
Huge amounts of clothing. One suit, 6 shirts, and someone said a pair of shoes and £20. I never saw that.
of course you didn't. That year, you did play in a state game that year, didn't you, 67?
Yeah, played against, after 4 league games, I think Alex Jeselenko and myself got picked to come down here to Tasmania to play in the second Victorian side, and Ron Barassi pulled out of the senior side that was playing WA at the MCG, and I came in at the last minute and I kicked 7 goals.
7 goals. It doesn't surprise me, given the ability you had, because of course Royce in 1996 was named centre half forward in the AFL team of the century. That year in 67, I reckon you might have alternated a bit between centre half forward and full forward, changing with the late Paddy Ganay.
Yes, we did. I started off at full forward, and The ball wasn't getting down there as much as Tommy Hafey wanted, so he put me out to centre-half forward, and I played the last half of the season at centre-half forward. And in actual fact, a guy by the name of Francis Burke, who made the All Australia, the Team of the Century side, he was playing as a rover when he came into the side at 6 feet one.
And ended up playing on a wing with Billy Barrett in the centre and Dick Clay on the other wing in that grand final.
Right, the great centre line.
It wasn't a great centre line. And you, well, you took that famous mark over the late and great Peter Walker during the last quarter at a crucial time. Is that the mark that sticks? I know you took a lot of them. Is that the one that sticks out for you?
Well, it's one, the one that's got the most publicity, and it was at the 20-minute mark of the last quarter, and I think scores were about level, and Peter Walker was there, and I had to jump on his shoulder, and I did that and took the mark, and it became very famous. But I look back on that game, and I reckon that what you said earlier on, the Geelong side was the best beaten side up until that time in a grand final. They had some magnificent players, and like Polly Farmer, Billy Goggin, Doug Wade, sensational players.
John Sharrock, Dennis Marshall, Roy West, and they, all those blokes end up, you know, Hall of Fame players, I suppose, weren't they?
Yeah, right. And Polly Farmer, to up until his death, vowed and declared that Geelong should have won the game because Fred Swift, at about the 27 minutes of mark of the last quarter, took a mark on the line. They didn't have cameras and had a goal umpire. And Polly vowed and declared it went through. And he said, if we'd have kicked that goal, we'd have won the game. They got beaten by 9 points, so it didn't make any difference.
It was a Billy Goggin kick, and I watched it again this morning. It looked like it might have been fairly close, I've got to say. doesn't matter. The goal up by Peter, there's a mark to Freddie Swift, and he played on and got you out of trouble. Is that the greatest game you played in? Because you played in, what, three other premierships for Richmond in your stellar career. Is that the one that sticks out?
Yeah, look, I think so, because of the fact that I was so young. And at that time, I just went by. Like, I was playing my first year of league football and came in and walked into a grand final side. One thing I do remember about it, they used to have the Murray Creek mud for the cricket pitch in the middle, and they used to have practice wickets on the side. And in September, at those days, it was pretty warm. I think it was about 30 degrees that particular day. And I came off the ground in the grand final with blisters on my feet.
Think of it. There's a famous story about you that Tommy Hafey, your coach at the time, his game plan was to get the ball and kick it to Royce because you were so dominant, which worked pretty well. And I guess Dennis Pagan was similar with Wayne Carey later on. But there's a story about, I think, up on an end-of-season trip at Bondi Beach or something like that, and a few of you had gone out for a swim, and a couple of you got in trouble. I know Tony Jewell tells the story, and that Tommy sent the lifeguard went out to get you. Is that a true story?
Well, what happened, we were in the water, and the tides at Bondi or wherever it was took us out, and we went out about 100 metres, and Tommy was swimming with Tony Jewell and myself, so... I was a bit further out than Tony Jewell, so Tommy swam past Tony Jewell and gave me a couple of pushes to get on a wave and came in, and Tommy came in too, and we're lying on the beach in our towels, and about 15 minutes later, Tony Jewell comes in, and he's looking blue, and he looked awful. Came up, and he said, "Why didn't you come and get me?" And Tommy said, "Back pockets are a dime a dozen, set a half foot are hard to get." That's how much Tommy valued football.
He's never got over that, TJ. He'll carry on to his grave.
I've never seen someone look so sick.
Footy's a vastly different game than when you played it and, of course, also coached it with Footscray these days. Do you like watching footy?
I like watching a good game, John. I sort of, some of the games I struggle with and I just turn it off or change channels or something. But some of the games are very good. But I like games where there's high marking, long kicking and plenty of scores. And I think Eddie Maguire a couple of weeks ago said about the thing, the reason why he took the footy or played footy as a kid is because they kick goals. And I remember about a month ago that there was a side in the AFL that kicked 2 points up to half time and they had 145 possessions. Now, Eddie said that he would have played soccer if we'd have kicked 2 points at half time. He said soccer would have been lovely. But he said kicking goals and taking marks and long kicks were the feature of our game. And I miss that. You know, the highlights of Australian rules are sensational to watch. But this game where you have to have a squillion possessions to kick a goal, it doesn't grab me much.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. But having said that, let's hope we get plenty of goals on Saturday night at the Gabba. I mean, you're biased because you're a Richmond champion, but do you think Richmond will win the game?
Well, Richmond are the better defensive side, but in my opinion, you've got to kick a score. I remember Tommy always saying that the scoreboard is what counts, and he doesn't care how many goals the opposition kick as long as we kick more. Well, that didn't happen in 72. We kicked a league record and got beaten, but Tommy was always winning the game on attack. But I think today, Richmond stand a real chance of losing the game if they can't get their two key forwards to kick at least six goals, because I don't think key forwards can survive on 10 possessions between them a game and a couple of goals. I think Lynch and Riewoldt have to kick goals.
Yeah, well, that sounds like you think it's going to be a very, very close result.
I think it'll either be Geelong by a lot or Richmond by a little, and I hope it's Richmond by a little.
Quick one.
Geelong, actually, when you look at it, John, you talk about the 1967 side, and we talked about those players, like your Farmers and your Goggins and your Wade and your Sharricks and Polinelli's and all those players, West, those sort of players that were really top-line players. And to the Saturday night's game, Geelong looked to have the same talent. Geelong have got terrific talent, but Richmond seemed to outnumber the opposition around the ball. And Tommy's whole theory with that was two will always beat one. And when I look at the replays of Richmond down here, they seem to have two players around the ball to compare to the opposition's one. And that's how they win.
Frenetic energy, isn't it? They swarm.
There it is.
Like a rugby union game at times. They just sort of come from everywhere. Yeah, so,
I listen to the game on the radio, so I don't have to look at the TV where I become too critical.
that's not a bad way.
If they have four kicks backwards, I don't see it on the radio.
That's better for the blood pressure, I think, Royce. I must do the same thing.
Hey, I'm still alive living in Tasmania.
It's been good speaking to you as always. Good health. Hope the best team wins on Saturday night. I know you're fair-minded, so you'll be the same way. And good luck with the Hugh and Pine collection that you've got down there, because I know you're a massive fan of the local produce of Hugh and Pine in Tasmania.
Yeah, it's terrific. And we haven't got the virus down here. We don't have to wear face masks.
Perfect. Good speaking to you, Royce, as always. Good health.
Scotty, the Super Score really comes into its own at this time of year, and it was a case of farewell in the Tuesday paper with an old colleague of ours, Mike Sheehan. He's officially retiring. The last open mic on Tuesday night with Fox Footy with none other than Robbo and Jared at the helm.
Yeah, no, it's emotional. I've seen a couple of clips and he gets a bit emotional. They hit him with some hard questions. But, yeah, Uncle Mike, 73, I think he said. You know, He guided me and Michael here through our formative years, and Ando's been with him a long way through it. But, yeah, it's hard to believe he won't be heard or seen anywhere, but he's set the agenda. As he said, one of his great legacies was getting jobs for all of us who have been on radio and TV stars like Michael. He's the one who blazed that trail. And, yeah, it's just sad in a way. I mean, we're still going to see him play golf against him and we'll still be getting horse tips off him. But it's an amazing stint and, yeah, he's helped a lot of people.
You've had the most to do with him. And I unfortunately only crossed paths for a little while when I think I came into the Herald Sun as a work experience student when I was a teenager or something. But unfortunately, he had moved on by the time I got there. You've got some dirt, surely.
I'm going to say about Michael. Jeez. Michael's professional in the extreme, extremely dedicated to his craft, unbelievably insecure for someone who is so successful and has achieved so much, and extremely generous of nature, which Scotty just touched on then when helping all of us. Yeah, he always put in a good word for you. So, and Michael, of all the journalists I've worked with, if you wanted to have a beer and a good fun time, Michael's as good as anyone in terms of company, male or female. always really comfortable in female company, which is not always the case with we sports head type blokes, you know. And I don't think you'd think that about us, Loz, but probably at times that's, you know, been the case with a male dominated sport, which fortunately it's no longer. Michael, he's a rip of dirt on Michael. Well, they're the stories I probably can't tell on.
No, there's one great one that we can't. I still love.
I suppose, but Debbie said
we
that,
might save it? That.
Yeah, he's an honest person, Michael. So there's not a lot of dirt there. But I just wish him the best. I mean, I'm glad that he's chosen his time to retire and hasn't been Fox telling him, look, we're not going to go on with the show next year. He's gone out very much on top. As he said to me the other day, there are people he would have liked to have got on the show who he couldn't get on, and some big names that he tried to, which I was surprised by.
Poor form by a couple of them, Andy.
Well, poor form by blokes who won $20,000 to come on the show. That was extraordinary. Which was Choco Williams and Buddha Hockey. I don't know. Maybe they thought that was what happened. You know, that he got paid to do it.
My mail is he told him quite clearly about three times it wasn't, and still asked.
Oh, well, I suppose if you don't ask, you don't get. That's probably their view. But that was unusual. But no, he's got a media room named after him, hasn't he? So the AFL and probably an award or whatever. Michael, he seems very happy, very content with his decision. He's going to become he's already a doting grandfather. He's got four with one on the way. And he says, I'm a very good grandfather, and he knows that he is, and he's proud of it. So that's what he'll be doing and watching.
I remember at the end of 2008 or 2009 when I came over to replace your mate Barrett Scotty from General News Sport. And
Michael.
I'd covered a bit of AFL sort of off-field stuff, the Ben Cousins stuff. So I was a little bit known to the AFL. So Mike took me down to AFL House. I'll never forget this, to meet with Demetrio. And so me and Mike and Demetrio, and I think it was Brian Walsh of the AFL who's back there now, actually. And we're sitting in his office. And, like, Demetrio's sitting across, you know, like, it was like you'd almost gone to meet God, you know. And it was the carry-on, like, oh, wow, you got an audience with this guy. And I think Demetrio said something to me like, so, you know, you're going to behave yourself? And I sort of said something pathetic, like playing each ball on its merits. And I'll never forget, we're walking back to work and Mike said, you can't beat City Hall, son.
Oh, well, you've had a crack.
You've had a good crack over the journey. And I don't think you're that unhappy last week when you saw Andrew Demetrio's name in the paper, Mick.
Did you see that performance?
It wasn't his proudest moment, but it's fair to say. But anyway, that's the bit to play out there yet, isn't it?
There is, yes.
And I can't wait to settle in, survive my interest in footy and journalism sort of spanned Mike's career. I grew up with him as the doyen of the Herald Sun, so I'll be certainly settling in tonight for Fox Footy as our chief, the new chief. Robbo sort of takes him to task on the last open mic. I can't wait for that one. But
we never knew who Scotty, he married for. That was the other thing with Mike.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mind you, it was
I
Melbourne.
Still couldn't tell you. Oh, Melbourne, yeah, that's very well. Mel and Sorrento, Mick. I think we'll be seeing him at plenty of Sorrento Sharks games once the NPNFL is back up and running. But Scotty, have you got a whisper for us as we head into the grand final?
Yeah, well, Hub Life, I always lean there. It's the Wags were at it yesterday, but we've moved on to an unusual mateship that we didn't know about. My male is a high-profile cycling identity. We're talking Tour de France-type operator. And an AFL boss, i.e. Gil, we're seen having beers together. So check that one out. An unusual sort of cross-sport bonding.
What? They might have been offering to present the Premiership Cup or something.
He might. I don't know who this gentleman barracks for, but he probably was getting sounded out, Mike, or to present the Brownlow, one of the two.
That is great. Well, you've got people everywhere, Scotty, as we know, a bit of cross-pollination. Cross-pollination. It will be sad to see the goodbye, the back of the Hubs. We'll be very... the fruitful land that has been the Hubs, unfortunately, draws to a close. I think Sam Landsberger's story said that the AFL COVID protocols end the second the siren goes on Saturday night. So watch out, Brisbane and Gold Coast, I would imagine.
Trouble.
It's 110 odd days of being locked up. So I'm sure Melbourne will be very much the same if we get released on Sunday. But it's time for tips, lads. Scotty, you're the neutral one among us. Give us your tip points and Norm Smith.
I think Geelong are playing as well as they can. So I think they might just get up in a very close one by 7 points. And I think Patrick Dangerfield, he doesn't have to play well for him to win, but if he plays well, like he did a couple of weeks ago, they'll win. So I think he's an obvious Norm Smith for me.
And
thank you, Loz.
Hey, Loz, I'm naturally enough, I'm Geelong. I'm Geelong by the number that Gary Ablett first wore when he played at Geelong.
Ooh.
He went, was that when he first wore, did he? 68.
No, I'm making it up.
29. Yeah, and
convincing victory.
I'm Brandon Parfitt to win the Norm Smith medal. Having said that, I tipped Richmond all year before the year began during the year. And recently, as a month ago, when we had to do a summation of September, and I had Shire Bolton as being the player of the final series. But once Geelong made it, it looked a bit funny if I actually went against them and tipped the Tigers. But I have great respect for Richmond and admire what they've achieved over the past 4 years, albeit losing a virtually unlosable prelim final, Mick, which I know you still struggle with a little bit. but, you know, 3 out of 4 would be brilliant. And you know, certainly you can do it. But I just think Geelong might have come good at the right time of the year. And but then Tommy Hawkins' sickness isn't exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't be ideal, would it? It just would be the final straw on the footy season, wouldn't it, if he was out of the game for that reason? Surely not. Over to you, Michael.
October 2017, Chris Scott, the day after Richmond won the premiership, said that the aesthetic style of how Richmond suffocated Adelaide was a worry for the game. Then in August 2018, Chris Scott said Richmond had won 19 games in a row at the MCG. They're good, but when you talk about juggernauts, they're not one of them, he said. Then September last year, he said, I'm not a big fan of looking too far back, but I think they were a better team last year than they are now. In March this year, he said that we're not in a dynasty era. With the greatest of respect to Richmond, they're not Hawthorne in the multiple premiership years. And even last week, he said he thought that Richmond, there was a sense earlier in the year that they weren't quite as good as they've been. I think all that adds up to the karma bus coming. And Richmond by 17, Dustin Martin to collect his third Norm.
Have you got those quotes ready to wheel out on Sunday?
It's a lot of research. You haven't done this much research.
It's a long tweet thread. You're going to have to compress that for the tweet machine.
No, I thought I'd dig them all out. There were 6 different cracks that he's had at Richmond. He doesn't respect Richmond.
He said last week they're the greatest team ever this year. He went over the top trying to win you over, didn't he, post-game?
No. It's been an interesting sort of watching his Richmond commentary over the years. But anyway, we'll see, Ando. I'll have my phone on or off, depending on what happens.
Well, I think I'm going to balance things out. I agree with you, Ando. I think Geelong have just timed their run perfectly. I'm tipping the Cats by 9 at this stage. And that could change before we have to do our tips for the paper, of course. And I don't know, the fairy tale just seems a bit too good to be true, but I think I might go for Gary. Well, we're well and truly in the Geelong camp then, it seems. Sorry, Mick, I'm deserting you for this one. It's going to be 3-1 Geelong. I'm going for Geelong by 9. I may change by the time the tips need to be put in for the paper. That's a lot can happen by then. And no, the fairy tale wins out for me. I think Gary Ablett to win the Norm Smith. So it'd be a great way to go out with a bang. So we unfortunately couldn't be even. You haven't managed to win over any of us, Mick, but we certainly wish you the best of luck on Saturday.
I'm sure you do.
Well, for the sake of my household, let me say we need Richmond to win, because it will be very dire in the Carrum Hub if they don't. But no, it should be a cracker either way. There's going to be massive live coverage across heraldsun.com.au. Of course, plenty of lead-up coverage in the Herald Sun, and then an absolutely bumper edition in both Saturday and the Sunday Herald Sun. So we'll keep you all across it. Good luck, Mick. Good luck, Ando. And may the best man win.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.